This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We begin today with our week in review, and quite a week it was.
Holy we just survived the tornado, Scott. We just survived the tornado, man.
Holy bleep is right.
Meanwhile, up in New Hampshire...
We know we can bring this country back. I'm Mitt Romney. I believe in America. And I'm running for president of the United States.
And a former Alaska governor swung through New England, but she says she wasn't trying to crash Romney's New Hampshire party.
It never was a consideration at all. In fact, if he personally would be offended by me stepping foot in a state that he is in, I wouldn't do it.
Also this week, the prosecution wraps up its argument in the federal corruption trial of former Massachusetts House Speaker Sal DeMasi. And the police respond to 1,000 mostly African-American youths at Carson Beach, and that continues to raise questions.
Those are among this week's big stories that we're considering this afternoon. And to help us do that, joining us right now is State House News Service General Manager Craig Sandler. Hey, Craig, good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
And also with us, Boston Globe columnist Derek Jackson. Hi, Derek.
Hey, thanks, Anthony.
Sure, great to have you. So let's start with what was undoubtedly the biggest news in Massachusetts this week and the region, these tornadoes in western and central Massachusetts that left quite a trail of destruction. And let's just listen for a bit here.
And we just fled to the basement, and within 2 minutes that lasted for us like an eternity, we came outside and there were people screaming in the streets. Everything was in disarray.
Mr. Fitch's headquarters advise all units to shelter in place. If there's another touchdown, there's a shelter in place, okay?
Trees that were of just massive size just knocked over like matchsticks, and houses flattened and roads completely impassable, and then dozens and dozens of powerful
branches, trees down, cars blown up. I mean, it was awful, and it happened in 2 minutes.
Well, in the 24 years of service for the city of Springfield, I've never seen this type of disaster before. It's very dangerous. It's very
unsafe. Obviously an awful lot of people have had their lives turned upside down, and we're going to do everything we can to help them get back on their feet.
And some voices there reacting to this week's devastating tornadoes, including Governor Deval Patrick at the end there promising that the state will do all it can do to rebuild. Gentlemen, Craig and Derek, when you hear those voices, when you look at the pictures of destruction, your heart goes out to those who lost their homes, who were injured. That said, I was amazed that only three people died. It could have been so much worse. Craig, what strikes you about these storms?
Sure, absolutely. The randomness is chilling, the fact that the front of your house can be ripped away and the pictures can remain on the inside wall. I also, you know, was personally appalled and amazed and chilled because I'm from Western Mass and actually used to commute every day to downtown Springfield. That skyscraper in the shot of the tornado heading toward downtown, mm-hmm. with the big skyscraper, is where I did my first news internship. So for me, just right at the core, I had the reaction that I think just about everybody in the state did. This is Massachusetts. I mean, it's the impossible occurring before your eyes, because the last thing that would ever have occurred to me is that a tornado could strike that city that I commuted to every day. It's Massachusetts. We don't have tornadoes, and it's a little frightening in that, of course, we feel the same way about earthquakes, don't we?
Mm-hmm. From time but of course, to time. There's a fault line, and yeah. It could come. Derek, I wanted to ask you, you know, it appears that credit for the fact that things weren't as bad as they could have been went to an early warning system. Your paper today credited the Southern New England Forecast Office, which is a branch of the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. Local media, local police seem to do a good job getting the word out. Was that one of the reasons that it wasn't as bad as it might have been?
I would think so. And I think it's a microcosm of the tornadoes across the country. Even though Joplin had a horrible, horrible disaster there, there's a lot of other evidence in Alabama and Mississippi and other places that the tornadoes are probably one of as scared as we are of so many other things. Tornado is probably among the top icons of things we just don't control.
Yeah.
The only thing we can control is the response when we think it's going to happen. It's kind of interesting to me, from a personal aspect. I talked to my dad last week, and they're from Mississippi, and they got hit by tornadoes on my grandparents' homestead, and my dad told me that unfortunately a tornado touched down about 2 football fields from where my grandparents grew up, and missed our property, but unfortunately killed 3 sisters the adjoining property. So, you know, it's for those who survive, it's by the grace of God, and for everybody else, it's hearts go out. And I guess the biggest thing when you have these occurrences that we don't control how it started, the best thing is to make sure that the governor, the state, the cities get the resources and also get people back on their feet as soon as possible.
Well, I wanted to ask about that because we heard in that clip that we played Governor Patrick promising the state would do all it can to help people rebuild. When you look at parts of Springfield and the small town like Munson, parts of which were just completely flattened, what can the state do? What should the state do? Craig Sandler.
Well, you know, I have a flip answer at the top of my head because Munson is one of the prime locations for locating a casino. And don't be surprised if we're here a year from now talking about locating it there partly as a recovery plan, as part of a recovery plan. I'll say more broadly, I mean, I think, again, not to make light of it or be, you know, be work a day about a tragedy, but the fact is that the systems are in place for helping people recover, and that includes the funds. I do think that the governor, again, came across very well in the face of a crisis. You know, what you saw was, you know, his performance was terrific. He played it well, and I think it's because it was based on sincerity. That's the ultimate in good politics. We saw this during the campaign. It could have been the reason he won the campaign. He's so good talking about people, and on this occasion, he was so good talking to people. And I think it's sincere, like it usually is with good politicians.
They were sincere words, but Derek, I guess the sort of proof will be in the pudding. Where will these communities be a week from now, a month from now, a year from now?
It's exactly. And it reminds me of something I heard President Obama say when he went to Joplin, that we won't rest until every home is restored, everybody's back. And on one hand, that's the politically correct thing to say, but you know, we're also look at Katrina in New Orleans, and there's a whole lot of people still not back in their homes after that disaster.
And so, Springfield was already in such tough shape.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think Munson probably can rise faster than a Springfield, again, because it's urban, like New Orleans.
Right. Well, let's move on to the big political story this week. Mitt Romney, former governor of Massachusetts, no surprise, he'd sort of been running anyway. He announced that he was going to announce, and then he announced yesterday. He's running for president. He was on a farm in Stratham, New Hampshire, and he took aim at President Obama, not surprising. And what he said was, look, we took a chance with Barack Obama. We hope for the best. But President Obama has failed. Let's listen to a bit of what he said yesterday.
When he took office, the economy was in recession, and he made it worse, and he made it last longer. 3 years later, over 16 million Americans are out of work or just quit looking for jobs. Millions more are unemployed. 3 years later, unemployment is still above 8%, and that was the figure he said his stimulus would keep from happening. 3 years later, foreclosures are still at record levels. 3 years later, the prices of homes continue to fall.
So that's Mitt Romney speaking yesterday in Stratham, New Hampshire. He might have added today, unemployment is now up over 9%. Derek, is this line of attack going to be fruitful for Romney?
I don't know where you start with that. Two things. One is that Mitt Romney has to define himself. He's had years to define himself, and he's still not a darling of his own party. His party can't figure out. He may win the nomination, but to what degree does he shape, remold himself, and that sort of thing is something. And I think just hearing that specific soundbite, the thing that strikes me is that it's not clear. If you look at polling data and things like that, I don't think the Republicans are going to get very far specifically with the argument of malaise, because
you mean economic malaise?
Economic malaise. It started before the 2008 election, and it's a bipartisan disaster, so it's going to be very difficult to see, unless he figures out a issue or a sort of persona that comes across in a different way that did not work in 2008 for him. He could win the nomination by default, but again, it's sort of symbolic of a Republican Party that is still trying to find some kind of solid footing.
Mm. Well, of course, Mitt Romney's got this big issue, and he tried to address it head on yesterday. The issue being that he signed the universal health care law in Massachusetts, was a big proponent of it, signed it into law. The national health care reform is based on that, which is now a target of conservatives. So here's how he dealt with that yesterday. He said the Massachusetts law was part of an effort to cut costs, and then he had this to say.
I also found the state was giving over $1 billion away in free health care, much of it to people who could have paid something but were just gaming the system. You won't be surprised that a lot of Democrats thought we should give them even more. I took on this problem and hammered out a solution that took a bad situation and made it better. Not perfect, but it was a state solution to our state's problem.
State solution to a state. You're shaking your head, Craig Sandler.
It just gets too complicated. For one thing, people want jobs and they want housing. Jobs, 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 housing, housing, housing. That's what he needs to talk about. He needs to talk about it very cogently. But Obama, as Derek correctly points out, it's the problems with jobs and housing are still largely, and will next year still largely be seen as a Bush created problem. Mm-hmm. Obama's biggest failure is seen as this, as what's called Obamacare now. There's no question about that. People don't like the bill. But the fact is, I don't think there's any way for Romney to effectively seal himself off from the fact that he endorsed a version of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. I just think
he authored it. I mean,
that's right. And so I think he would be very well served to get away from that, get a specific wildfire, really cogent idea on jobs or on housing, some sort of, private sector motivated public-private partnership on putting people into good homes and creating jobs that way. Talk about that kind of stuff and moving on. By the way, I don't think he'd be a bad candidate in the general. Whether he can get the nomination in that party is a different story. I think he could catch fire, actually, in a general, especially if a year from now, Lord, the unemployment rate is still going up. Then it will start to be seen as Obama's problem, and Romney could have a terrific September and October. But the guy's got to have something specific, and we waited for a long time in Massachusetts for him to have something specific, and it never happened. It was actually even frustrated. I saw a lot of Democrats in that building who were frustrated because we kind of thought his book's called Turnaround. Mm-hmm. And we kind of thought he was, in fact, going to be qualified. He was going to display how wonderfully qualified he was to turn around a public sector as he had done in the private sector. And it never happened. And before long, he's running for president. And there was a great sense of disappointment among moderate Democrats and definitely among conservative Democrats in that building. He still has to solve that part of his leadership mosaic. If he does, I think he can win the presidency.
Yeah, I think as well, Craig, I think the thing that Romney has to his strength, I think that amongst all the declared Republican candidates, is if he wants to, he has a shot at the relatively moderate playing field.
Yes, sir.
One of the reasons he didn't win in 08 is he could not define that. Yeah. So here's a guy who, governor of a liberal state,
yep.
He is against, we don't know where he stands on abortion and things like right. and that. But the point is that
he was
governor of a liberal state. The state of Massachusetts did not collapse one way or the other in terms of social politics. So
that's right.
So a big key is whether or not he gets a sort of, I think in this case, a plurality of Republican base to go along with a more moderate, at least public stance.
Very well said.
I think the moderate is the key thing there, and he's got to stay moderate, especially to win that all-important New Hampshire primary. And what happened in 08 is he began to sort of trying to appeal to the more conservative Republican base in Iowa, and I think he lost ground in New Hampshire and handed it to Hillary Clinton.
I think you're right. I want to say, too, people lose sight of the fact of what a nice guy he is. Mm-hmm. He's a terrific person, mm-hmm. and I don't know whether he can project that successfully does obviously comes across sometimes as stiff or fake. Mm-hmm. He's a cheerful, intelligent, very, very decent guy. If the country can connect with that, he hasn't had a chance to do it in the general. You know, only in the primaries. That's two different things. If the country can latch on to that, and he can really communicate, he may only be able to do it one-on-one. I don't know. But if he's able to communicate, what a good guy he is. If he's got one cogent idea on jobs, you know, I really think he's got a lot of potential.
So listen, let's move on to one of the big local stories, another local story, and that is over the Memorial Day weekend, a series of fights broke out on Carson Beach among mostly African-American youth kids. State police made 5 arrests. An estimated 1,000 teens had gathered on the beach. State police said they were investigating whether rival gangs were fighting. Boston police say that wasn't the case. We talked to Emmett Folgert of the Dorchester Youth Collaborative, who said this.
The first fight was involved with 2 girls, not gang girls, but just with 2 girls. There is a problem always if you're going to have that many young people over, you know, course of a few days. You're going to have a couple of hundred that really shouldn't be at the same place at the same time. And those would be gang members, but nobody I'm talking to, my staff and the young people, many who were there, said that this was a planned gang fight.
Not a planned gang fight, he said. Derek Jackson, what's your view what happened here and how the police reacted?
From what I can tell, it sounds like the state police overreacted and the slapping the gang label on this thing. I do think Menino and Police Chief Davis have a very important point about the city police having laid years of groundwork trying to understand young people in their communities, so that when something goes down, they have a very quick sense of whether it's a individual, it's a general group thing, or it's a quote gang thing. I think the two things that were maddening about this thing is here we are just kind of coming out of the Arab Spring, and according to, I think, Folgert himself, among others, the hundreds of kids were using social networking.
That's right.
To gather on a beach to fight. And that's one piece that's just maddening to me. And the second is that it was girls who got it started. And I guess then that leads up to a third thing, is that if these hundreds of kids have such idle time to use social networking to gather to fight, I think the city may want to, I think the mayor may want to really sit down a little more with community youth leaders and say, you know, what is it that we need to do? And clearly with the city 2,400 jobs short of the 10,000 summer goal,
right.
That's the first place to start, is to get these kids off the streets into some responsible jobs for the summer.
The summer jobs, of course, always important. But were they really using social network to say, let's go fight? My understanding was a lot of them were using social network to just say, hey, let's go to the beach. It's a hot day.
Perhaps a little bit of both. And by the way, the implication is clear. You can see a lot of room here for a constructive response. For one thing, the city police and the state police need to sit down, get their act together. Davis needs to sit down with the
Commissioner Davis,
Right. Thanks. With the responsible officials of the state police, and coordinate how are we going to deal with this, not for the rest of this summer and also going forward. That was messed up. The other thing clearly is that it's time for some cutting edge, and Boston is a good place for this. Some cutting edge youth workers to hop on Twitter and Facebook and texting, and it's time. It sounds like it's time for the next generation of hot, you know what, 19-year-old youth workers, 23-year-old youth workers who are social networking all the time, so that when they see the kids starting to mash up, starting to gather up, starting to meet up on these social networks, they're there too, saying, "Great, you guys, I'll be there in a second." You know, I don't want to say who wants ice cream. Boy, do I sound like a bogey. But you know what I mean.
We get it.
I'll be there. Let's have some fun.
Greg Sandler, hold that thought, because our time is running out and we have to move on to our weekly hubbub, that story or news item that missed the front page. I want to bring Meghna back into the conversation. Meghna, what do you have for us?
That smile.
So are any of you, Derek or Craig, are you pet owners?
Yes.
Bunny.
bunny. Yes. You have a bunny.
How's Bonnie?
You have a dog?
My dog that runs up to 16 miles with me in the wintertime.
Oh,
ooh,
wow.
That's
that,
a cool
that's like
dog.
He's a tough dog. And I know that, Anthony, you have a cat, right?
I have a cat,
okay,
yeah.
So because there are dog people, there are cat people, and I guess in Craig's case,
yeah,
there are bunny
that's
people.
That's right.
But apparently there are dog universities and cat universities, too, because not so long
that's
ago.
That's called Georgia.
That's true. But not so long ago at MIT, they did this research about how cats drink water, and they concluded that cats drink water in a certain way that made them very dainty and polite and didn't spill all over the place. Well, Harvard has now come back and said, no. Dogs are not the messy ones. Dogs actually drink the same way as cats do. It's just they kind of have bigger mouths.
They're bigger.
So
yeah.
They're a little sloppier, but they don't drink differently.
Want etiquette, turn to a rabbit.
We happen to have a dog who has a big bushy beard, so it doesn't matter how he drinks. He just drags water all the way across the hall. So,
all right,
there
there's a vote in favor of dog etiquette. Craig, what do you have for us?
Well, you know, mine isn't as cheerful, and mine usually are pretty cheerful, but in this case, I'm ticked off.
Okay.
Monday, and it's one of the very few things around the State House I express an opinion on. Monday was JFK's 95th birthday. You go up on Beacon Street, you look at the State House grounds. There's this beautiful statue commissioned by Caroline of JFK, hand in the jacket pocket, the familiar pose. Generation of kids doesn't even know who JFK is. He's standing right there on the State House grounds behind bars because the entire State House grounds are inexplicably walled off, sealed, fenced off. It's supposedly security. This is nonsense. I run a news service in Florida, 17 million residents, 186,000 state workers. Those grounds aren't sealed off. Atlanta, Georgia, those grounds aren't sealed off. I've never heard a cogent explanation as to why it's a
security issue. I was
going to
ask. So, you have asked for a cogent explanation and not gotten one.
Exactly. You know, it's near the building. Well, that's true, but you could walk into the building and, as they say, state houses everywhere are open. And the one other thing I'll say is that the Patrick administration has already announced that it's formulating a plan to allow access to the JFK statues and perhaps part of those grounds. That was months ago. If you really wanted to do it, you could do it in a day. And
all
they're
right.
not doing it.
Well, we'll look forward
Angry
to that.
Craig.
Derek, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm a comic book science fiction guy who knows that Jor-El sent Kal up in a rocket to come to Earth to become Superman. So I'm one of these crazy people that got up at 3:30 in the morning on Tuesday to watch the International Space Station and Spatial Endeavour go across the sky.
Nice.
For me it was like a metaphor of the whole space program because you watch these two objects, one trailing the other at 17,500 miles an hour. And I'm like, you know, this is really cool. And it's all up there because we were fired up in our imaginations 40 years ago to put a man on the moon. And then it became, and we did it. And it inspired, I'll never be a math major, but I love science today.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many other millions of Americans our age, mid-50s, who were inspired.
Speak for yourself.
so inspired. So
and around the world, people around the world.
Yeah.
So, and now that the shuttle system, program
to
is
see
ending,
it come to an end. Yep.
I guess the thing for me is what's going to be the next. It's not, we're all bored with our laptops and computers already. What's going to be the next scientific endeavor, no pun intended, that's going to be lift up a whole nation to want to care about science in general and also to fire up our sort of, you know, curiosity all over again?
Well, gentlemen, I think we're out of time, so I'm going to skip my hubbub and hold it for another time. But I want to thank you both for joining us. Derek Jackson, columnist for the Boston Globe, thank you so much for coming.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Come back and see us. And Craig Sandler, State House News Service General Manager. Thank you very much.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Stay with us. Up next, a new musical about the life and times of factory girls in 19th century Lowell. And we're going to go out on Gil Scott-Heron, who died a week ago. I was a big fan. We couldn't acknowledge it on the show, so I guess in a way that's my hubbub. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Gil Scott-Heron, and you're listening to him on Radio Boston.